from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening, wherever you are listening from. This is Rob Watson, and this is Rated LGBT Radio. And we are your one-stop information source for thoughts and discussion on the latest breaking news of the day, particularly focusing on the LGBTQ community. This week, we are going to be talking about America's dark past, the lynching legacy. And this is a subject we don't talk about very often. It is seen as part of classic racial intimidation, and it is actually racial terrorism that is, quite frankly, it's not talked about anywhere in our country, but from the LGBTQ perspective, it is like the granddaddy of bad inequality behavior in a big scale, and is really the legacy trickle down for a lot of the treatment of LGBTQ people, but it is still pervasive for the African-American community, and the horrors that were put on the African-American community were, and in some cases still are, greater than what anybody else in our society is experiencing, even though there are still horror stories from different segments. Tonight, our guest will be, when she calls in, from the Southern Poverty Law Center, Leisha Brooks. We've had her on before, and it will be a pleasure to talk to her again. She is Outreach Director for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and she's going to address the lynching legacy, but specifically a new memorial that is being developed and launched in Alabama. And Oprah Winfrey piece on this last Sunday on 60 Minutes. And it is an impressive, dramatic memorial whose time has come. And not only has the memorial time come, but the time for us to have this conversation and understand the total pervasiveness and legacy and influence that these activities had, not just in the past, but on the current day. But before we get to that, I want to welcome onto the show our regular panelist, our producer, our go-to guy, our authority, Brody Levesque. Welcome to the show, Brody.
Hey, good evening, Rob. How are you tonight?
I am very good. And we do have Leisha on deck waiting to come on. But before we brought her on, I wanted to cover a few things with you that have been happening. One, the Comey book came out. And tell me if I'm wrong, but I saw nothing new there.
The Washington Post is reporting on it, and ABC News' George Stephanopoulos had an interview. Comey essentially accused the president of the United States of being a mafia boss. He compared him to actually one of the New York Dons. And I think in a lot of ways, that's probably a pretty accurate assessment. Most of the book seems to tweak in on the president's obsession with the dossier, the infamous Steele dossier, as it were, talking about the salacious details of the president's private sexual behaviors. It doesn't really look, and I haven't had a chance to really go through everything yet, but from what I'm seeing from what the Post and ABC is reporting, we're not really seeing anything that hasn't already pretty much been put out there before. I think it's just for the first time, the former director kind of lays it out linear so that we have a chance to follow along with it. Again, Comey described Trump as being severely obsessed with abortion, dealing with prostitutes in the dossier, which was compiled by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele. And according to Comey, he raised it at least four times with him during private meetings he had with the president. But I, you know, overall, and again, I haven't had a chance to go completely through of it, but, you know, the director painted the president, and I'm quoting the Washington Post, in his memoir, Comey paints a devastating portrait of a president who built, quote, a cocoon of alternate reality that he was busily wrapping around all of us, end quote. He goes on to describe Trump as a congenital liar and unethical leader, devoid of human emotion and driven by personal ego. So if any of you follow Trump's tweets and some of the nonsense that goes on coming out of that White House, this is not news.
This is not news. Yeah. This is like, okay, yeah, we get it. We got it. We really know the guy. And the mob boss portrait sounds completely accurate just by observation from what I see as well. My concern, though, is there are a couple of hearings going on the Hill, confirmations that really should be getting some focus, and I'm afraid they're being overshadowed. Can you give us some light on what those confirmation hearings are about and what you've heard through them?
Well, today was a little contentious on Capitol Hill. Defense Secretary James Mattis was in front of a House committee and under questioning by California Congresswoman Jackie Speier, more or less deflected on the issue of the transmilitary ban. He did not give the Congresswoman a straight answer. Now, ironically enough, at the same time, on the other side of the Hill in a Senate hearing, both the Army Secretary and the Army Chief of Staff essentially told Senator Gillibrand in New York and the other senators on that panel that there was no problem with transmilitary service. And when asked if there had been any issues raised, the Army Chief of Staff responded with precisely zero. Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo, of course, was on the Hill today. And he and Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey went round and round. The basic takeaway from it was the Secretary of State does not believe in same-gender marriage, doesn't think it should be, you know, something that he has to deal with. He was very unaffirming. Booker tried to nail him on a couple of other points, and he just deflected all over the place. And then we have a judge that's going up, and this judge is of concern to our guest tonight, too. Judge Vitter is being elevated for a U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The problem is when she was questioned directly on one particular very important Supreme Court decision, Brown versus the Board of Education, which actually set the tone for desegregation in U.S. public schools, she deflected. And she would not affirm that decision. And that one got everybody's eyebrows raised. Not a decision normally that you would expect that kind of deflection or, you know, and it was, she weaseled. There's no nice way of putting it. But as we're going to be talking to Leach tonight, this is part and parcel of the problem. The conversation that is going on now in certain Republican circles is an echo chamber, and quite frankly, it is racist. And these people are now, you know, being run by, you know, the Senate for nomination to important places or for confirmation on nominations by the White House. And they're the type of people, quite frankly, the Americans really do not need sitting as judges because, as you know, Rob, judges are there for a good piece of time, and that means that negative kind of influences and decisions can really harm folks, particularly the vulnerable communities, the Black community, which there's already an issue with the school-to-prison pipeline with them and the disenfranchisement with the voting and everything else that they're going through. The things going on with DACA and the immigration issues, and just generally the white supremacy, white nationalists, and some of the other things that are going on. So this is very, very problematic. And it's another reason that I think that the timing of the opening of the Equal Justice Initiative's memorial and museum is so critical. But I'll let Leach talk about that. So that's what's going on.
Right, and I want to go back, though, to the Secretary of State
hearings and just emphasize why his homophobic positions are important. We have, you know, seemingly, you know, he's would be responsible for kind of rest of world relationships, but we have so many hot spots in the world where human rights and LGBTQ actually torture and vilification and you know, all sorts of atrocities are going on, and we need someone who really will step up the way Hillary Clinton did in the job and stand up for human rights worldwide. So neither one of those is a small deal.
No, and you're not going to get that from Pompeo. He's a former teabag congressman from Kansas's 4th Congressional District. He was a firebrand. He cited a prayer in a speech, and this was something that Senator Booker, you know, asked him about, where an anti-gay preacher described homosexuality as a perversion and an alternative lifestyle. And Pompeo dodged Booker's question about whether he thinks being gay is a perversion. And see, that is a huge problem, because we have hot spots in the world, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, in places like Uganda and Kenya and some of these other, in that particular countries, Nigeria, where, you know, people are getting murdered. And so it does, and just simply because they're LGBTQI. So yeah, Pompeo's a bad thing. Now, his confirmation, he'll probably make it through the committee that he's in front of, Senate Foreign Relations. But the problem is going to be on the Senate floor. Right now, it may look like he may not have enough votes, and we're all basically hoping that's the case. In which
right.
case, it'll be interesting to see what the administration does.
Wow. So thank you so much for that overview. I hope people listen to this and take call to actions on both these hearings and contact their representatives and let their viewpoints be known. They both sound like dangerous individuals in their own right and very scary. And quite in line to your point, especially this judge, sounds like a complete descendant of the legacy of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. And with that segue, and I'm going to call it a segue, I want to bring on our guest for the evening, Leisha Brooks, Outreach Director of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me back, Rob.
Oh, our pleasure.
Okay.
Always our pleasure. Leisha, I assume you saw and are familiar with the Oprah Winfrey piece and the memorial that is happening in Alabama. Can you give us some perspective on it?
Yes, we're all very, very excited in Alabama for the opening of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice that's being sponsored by the Equal Justice Initiative. Brian Stevenson, who kind of more and more people are becoming familiar with his name, wonderful, wonderful work being done there. They're also opening a museum called From Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. And it's really interesting now that they're about to open and it's getting national attention because it's really starting a national conversation, a conversation that we should have, you know, begun years ago, decades ago, about the horrible legacy of lynching and the enslavement of African Americans in this country.
I think one of the things that's kind of important to note is that there has not been enough conversation about accountability and responsibility, particularly on the part of the white community. Yeah, one of the things that and in particular, and I know that we're going to talk about the SPLC's educational initiative that you guys are running, but I think one of the most important things here is this gets completely overlooked in education. It gets almost as if it's erased. And there is a solid period of time, longer than Black Americans were enslaved, starting at the end of the Civil War, going through the Civil Rights Movement, even into current day, where it is just an oppressive and repressive form of a continuation of not slavery so much, but a complete and total disenfranchisement. And, you know, for anybody that needs context, they need to understand, you know, exactly what the black community has faced all this time. And, you know, one of the things, and Lisa, you and I have spoken about this previously, and especially, and I'm going to reference directly to what the producers at 60 Minutes did, was they, no hold barred, went ahead and displayed graphic photographs, which were actually passed around as postcards and something to quote about during that time period of the worst of the lynchings, which, if I remember correctly, happened between 1913 and roughly 1933. That time period was, I don't want to say the high watermark of lynchings, but it was certainly a substantial amount going on. And I think the other thing that people don't realize. Go ahead, Leisha. I'm sorry. All right, go ahead.
You're absolutely correct. And Brian Stevenson refers to it as a time of terror, the terrorizing of African-American people and families. And what we got to see in the 60 Minutes piece with Oprah Winfrey was that it's exactly what you're saying. And some people knew, but not enough people knew that lynchings took place regularly in this country and were seen as social events. The kids got out of school, families went. It was like an outing that was to be celebrated. This dehumanizing act of murder, terrorizing African American people. The Equal Justice Initiative in February 2015, they released a report called Lynching in America, Confronting the Legacy of Racial Terror. And Brian's been talking about for some time this connection between the enslavement of African Americans to this period of the Jim Crow era and the lynching that took place over that period of time. As you mentioned, well, what the museum will look at, the memorial rather, looks at the lynchings of over 4,000 African Americans between 1877 and 1950. 1877 and 1950. And I will add a little footnote. The Civil Rights Memorial Center, the Southern Poverty Law Center's museum, we have a case. It's called the Michael Donald case, often referred to as the last lynching. This 19-year-old African-American was lynched in Mobile, Alabama in 1981. So I think that what we're getting from Brian and the Equal Justice Initiative is the importance of talking about this. We have to recognize our past. We have to kind of own it, and that we cannot move forward in a spirit of reconciliation until we actually acknowledge what happened. Now, you mentioned the photos that I think rightly 60 Minutes, chose to air. It's interesting because what we heard the day after was the discomfort that was felt by white people around, oh, my gosh, you know, why did you show these pictures? It's just too much, you know. Well, you know, think about the horror that African-American families who had to witness their loved ones being murdered, had to live with the threat that they could be next. We're talking about something, as you said, that started in slavery, continued over time. It added to the great migration of African Americans out of the South to the North because people feared that, you know, they could be lynched. So it's a part of history that I think it's important for us to look at because the enslavement of African Americans, what have happened to African Americans since we were brought to this country, really speaks to, as you said, the white supremacy that exists today. Enslavement, lynching, all of these things are the foundation for the race relations that we continue to deal with today and the foundation of white supremacy in this country.
Now, before Rob jumps in, there's one thing that I wanted to note, and you and I had kind of discussed this. One of the things that I thought was really critically important about those photographs, and I believe that was actually pointed out in Oprah's piece, was that it was a real Emmett Till moment. And you know, when I was a young reporter, Alicia, I was honored to be part of the opening ceremony of the Vietnam Memorial on the Mall in Washington. And one of the things that struck me the most, a very simple memorial, I mean, it's the shape of a V, it's black granite with the names carved on it. There's nothing ostentatious about it at all whatsoever. But the reaction, the visceral gut reaction of the veterans to just this simple thing and their families. And then I was watching the broadcast, and as Oprah and Brennan were walking through there, and the imagery of the way the memorial is built with those squared off, you know, rusted steel half columns strung up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally hanging as if they were, you know, they're obviously symbols of, you know, human bodies. And my mind immediately went to, you know, my being at the wall that day and the dedication and seeing the look on Vietnam veterans and families. And then the thing about the photographs, that was an Emmett Till moment, and rightly so.
Yes, no,
Brody,
I completely agree.
Do you want to explain what that is, what that means? Brody?
Well,
you know
really...
what? I'm gonna deflect to Alicia for that one because she can do a better job with this. Alicia?
Okay. It really is. The Emmett Till moment is it speaks to Mrs. Till, Mamie Till's decision to have photographs published of her son, 14-year-old Emmett Till, who was murdered, you know, in Mississippi. She decided that she would not have an open casket. She decided that she would not let him just kind of, you know, brush this to the side. She had an open casket. Black Press, Jet magazine decided to publish the pictures, and then they became a part of the national consciousness. And then people became aware of what was happening in the South to African American people. The funeral was held in Chicago. She had that open casket, and about over 20,000 people walked through that church and saw Emmett Till's body. And that was really one of the major sparks for the civil rights movement. It's one of the things that really moved Rosa Parks and so many other people to get involved in civil rights activism. It was a true, true kind of moment and just courageous on the part of Emmett Till's mom. Brody, you talked about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and you're absolutely right. It's very powerful. People always think, and this came up during Oprah's interview too, like, you know, do people want to really see that? Do people really want to talk about it? Well, the people, you know, families who were victimized by it, they need that acknowledgement. They need to know that their loved ones are remembered, that they're honored in some kind of way, that we're acknowledging the wrong that was done. It's so, so important. The Civil Rights Memorial in Montgomery that SPLC had commissioned was also done by Maya Lennon. In fact, it was the piece that she did after the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And it honors 40 individuals, including Emmett Till, who were killed between 1954 and 1968. When we dedicated that memorial in 1989, every family member, every family was represented at that dedication. And I cannot tell you how important something like that is. It's just important to know that maybe you know your humanity wasn't valued then, but it sure is now. It's important. It's important to us. It's important. Brian talked about, you know, the effect or the impact not only on African Americans but on white folks, on every U.S. citizen. This is something that we need to reckon with, that we need to acknowledge as wrong. It was wrong for those families. It was wrong for people to be lynched. It was wrong for them to have this spectacle. It was wrong for them to bring children to watch this and think about the desensitization that happens at such a young age, watching their family members murder someone and then kind of, you know, enjoy that. Imagine the emotional impact that has on children. And so we see that how that brings us to this day where we continue to dehumanize one another. And in particular, you know, African Americans continue to be dehumanized and black bodies continue to be kind of terrorized and tortured in this society.
Yeah, actually, that leads me to kind of my question, Alicia. And I'm going to give you some perspective on this because I'm actually going to be asking about perspective. A friend of mine and I, he's actually a co-host of my other radio show out in Santa Cruz, are embarking on just a side project for ourselves to watch the 100 greatest movies of all time as defined by the AFI. And the original list, which is compiled around the year 2000, one of the movies that was on it was a movie called Birth of a Nation. And Birth of a Nation came out in 1915. It did not make the later list of 2011, but we decided to watch the movie anyway because there it was on the best movies of all time in the year 2000. I have never seen a more racist, horrific film in my life. It was 3 hours long. Mm-hmm. It was about the birth of the Ku Klux Klan, and it basically set the stage for all of this. I mean, it and doing research on the film, it was made so long ago in 1915 that a lot of the advisors on the film were actually vets from the Confederacy in the Civil War, were actually the advisors on this film. And the film was basically showed after the war, black people taking control of their government and being incompetent, and of course every black person in the film was a white or black faced white person underneath, they were played for maximum buffoonery characteristics, and the Klan was portrayed as this heroic group coming together and keeping and by oppressing the black vote they were saving society. I mean, that was basically the upshot of the film. When that came out in 1915, that was the Star Wars of its day. I mean, that was the film of its day. And I just see so much through line in this country from that, setting the stage. That was only 100 years ago. That was our media 100 years ago that was right, in the sweet spot of this arc of lynching. Then we have things that are legacy in our country from the Second Amendment, which was put in there to protect militias, to guard slavery for the South, to even the Electoral College, which was based on numerics to support Southern states with their slavery. I mean, we have so many legacy systems. And then to what you brought up with the judicial system, how African Americans are seen and how they're treated with either both from justice, but as well as law enforcement and the danger that they are seen to possess just on site. So my question, I guess, is how do we bring the lynch memorial up from an isolated, horrific part of our past to something that we need to see as a byproduct of a whole system that we are in today? How do we bring it
as
a systematic conversation?
That's exactly what we need to do. If I could add just a couple of facts about the Birth of a Nation, I'm so glad that you raised that. It was the first American blockbuster film 100 years ago. And President Woodrow Wilson held a screening at the White House. I mean, it's unthinkable that today that would happen. But the President of the United States had a screening at the White House in honoring this film. Also, the subhead on the posters clearly stated that Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffin's The Klansman. That's what it was. And it was a shot in the arm to the Ku Klux Klan and kind of really responsible for their resurgence. Now, your question as to what we need to do brings me to the report that Brody alluded to earlier, that Teaching Tolerance, the education project of the Southern Poverty Law Center. On February 1, we launched this report called Teaching Hard History. We surveyed 1,000 high school seniors and about 1,700 social studies teachers about what they knew about the enslavement of African Americans or slavery in general. And what we found, you won't be surprised, is that it's if it's taught at all, it's sanitized, and it's taught without any context at all. What we found from teachers is, in particular white teachers, you know, kind of afraid to teach it, afraid that it will either trigger upset and instill guilt in white students, and so they just don't teach it. Add to that that what's said in the textbooks that are used don't tell a complete story. The survey results were just incredible. Kids couldn't even, you know, for the most part, maybe less than 30% of the high school students surveyed could tell you what ended slavery and what was the middle passage. Things that, you know, should be common knowledge. So you ask what we should do? We need to start teaching our true history, our real history, to young people and begin to have this conversation and create the context. Talk about kind of how one thing led to another and leads us to the place that we are today. Brian said it, of course, you know, kind of much better than I do. But he's been talking about this for some time. He says you cannot, and this is in Montgomery, Alabama, you know, birthplace of the civil rights movement, where we kind of memorialize every civil rights event. He said we cannot talk about civil rights without talking about the enslavement of African Americans. We can't talk about civil rights unless we talk about the Jim Crow era and what has happened and what led us to this point. The enslavement of African Americans, the ending of slavery in this country, vis-a-vis the 13th Amendment, leads us to where we are today in terms of the mass incarceration of African Americans. It's a through line. And what we need to do is interrupt this notion that, you know, that there's no more work to be done in terms of building a better nation. You know, there's work to be done for us to kind of live up to these high ideals of our democracy. We need to recognize that the enslavement of human beings was enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. Most people don't know that. And so we get to this place where, oh, my God, people said, well, why are the black people still talking about this? We had the elected officials in Montgomery who didn't want Brian to do this at all. A few years ago, he started out by erecting some markers to the slave trade, because Montgomery was a place was one of the last places where slaves were brought into this country. City officials didn't even want that to be done. They're like, why are we talking about this? This is not something we want to talk about. Well, in fact, it is something we want to talk about. If we want to get to the place where everyone is treated with dignity and respect, then we're going to talk about our true history. And not just the true history of African Americans. I'm talking about, we can spread this writ large. We need to talk about the history of the United States, and that is what will bring us to this place where we can move forward.
I think the biggest part of it is context, and one of the problems that I've always had as a journalist, and I've even had this with the large media companies that I've worked for, is there seems to be an aversion to reality when it comes down to having this discussion. You know, they can talk about the civil rights movement in abstract, and they talk about the high marks. The 64 murders of James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, the assassination of Dr. King in 68, Edgar Myers, I mean, the list goes on, okay? But what people aren't being taught and what is really causing the problem is that the narrative that was set down and successfully lobbied by one organization for years has taken root in the American educational system, and that has become the narrative. And that organization is the United Daughters of the Confederacy. That is the number one organization responsible for the disenfranchisement of black Americans and revisionist history that makes the South looks good. They put lipstick on a pig. And to this day, that continues. We need to make sure... You know, yeah, I've heard the argument, well, we can't teach that history because we might trigger our black students or, you know, like, no, We need to have an accountability here. This is the reality. When you look at those pictures that were broadcast, and I've seen worse, you look at the faces in the crowds, and like you said, this was legacy. That got passed on. The 64 murders, okay, that occurred by Klansmen of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner are a direct result of the lynchings and the public lynchings of the 1920s. And the that even at a federal level, nothing was done. FDR avoided that one like the plague. That just, you know, no one wanted to talk about this. This is like the bastard child or that weird uncle that we just kind of ignore. No, you can't ignore it anymore. If you want the context of why we have the problems today, like what happened in Charlottesville, there is a direct linear correlation here. And the context is Black Americans are disenfranchised, and it is because of the narrative and people not paying attention. I will now get off my soapbox.
Well, I can kind of bring it even closer back to the lynching of Michael Donald, the 19-year-old Black man in Mobile, Alabama, in 1981. Jeff Sessions was refusing. He was Attorney General at the time, and refused to or. Came around later, but he didn't want to bring charges. He didn't want to pursue it as a lynching by Klansmen. Now, of course, his revisionist history is that he was all about it. If you hear his telling of the story, he's the one that's responsible for bringing the Klan to justice, when in fact that's not the way it happened at all. And now he's the Attorney General of the United States. So, you know, it all, you're absolutely right. It's all connected. It's all connected.
I have to say, Alicia, when you were referring to Woodrow Wilson being a president who would have such a screening at the White House and how unthinkable that would be, I actually did think, well, up until the present president, because right now I'm not sure it would be all that unthinkable. I have a sort of off question for you, because one area that I see today as kind of a modern day subtle lynching that is going on is the HIV outbreak with African-American men in the South, and the lack of health care, lack of education, and repression of information about AIDS, and repression of getting them the appropriate medication. And no one seems to be talking about that. Am I like in my own little bubble on that one, or is that a real problem?
No, it is a real problem. You're absolutely right. I mean, I don't know the statistics, but I believe that I heard that Montgomery, Alabama, has one of the highest rates of new infections of HIV. I mean, today, right? And I know that, you know, you can't talk about heterosexual sex, let alone kind of same-sex sex. I mean, you can't talk about sex, period. The place is so repressive, you know, across the board. And I believe that it's that kind of politics or those kind of policies or that kind of extremism that leads to this, the kind of increase in new infections. It is ridiculous that today in 2018 that we would be talking about a place that is increasing its first time HIV in infection. So you're absolutely right. It is something that's happening. It's these things that we don't want to talk about. That's what I was alluding to when I said there's so much that we need to talk about. There's so much that we need to talk about. I mean, people have been kind of terrorized in this country for being other, you know, other than kind of what it is. Everyone that kind of veered from that, from the beginning of time, from the beginning of the Constitution, any person who veered from that, white, male, Christian, landowner thing, and the further and further you moved away from it, the more othered you became. And that's just a part of our history as well.
But I think it's also something that we really need to do, and this education initiative that I think you guys are proposing is probably a move in that direction. But one of the other things that concerns me, and of course the Southern Poverty Law Center, the American Civil Liberties Union, and some of these other legal groups are also confronting extrajudicial lynching that's going on now at the hands of American law enforcement. There's no other way of putting to context, all right, when a white police officer shoots an unarmed black male, or we saw what happened in Sacramento. This is a simple continuation of the same problem. And it seems to me that we really need to have hard discussions about this, and we really need to have discussions that center around the fact that there is an inherent built-in process here that needs to be broken. We see it in the educational systems, and I know that you folks see it in Alabama in particular, where we have the school-to-prison pipeline that oftentimes will lead up to these extrajudicial shootings. Now, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that are going to be real unhappy with me, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate mail tomorrow, and that's okay. But it is a problem, and it needs to be talked about it, and it is lynching. I'm sorry. Every time a police officer in this country shoots an unarmed black male, he has just lynched that person, period, end of discussion. No excuse.
Well, I certainly do. I do believe that it's connected to our long history of dehumanizing black bodies. And so, and this whole kind of notion you talked about, Rob, you talked about Birth of a Nation, that things like that were meant to instill fear in white folks, and in that black people, black men in particular, were these dangerous, dangerous kind of animals. And so that legacy continues to this day and adds to the as you call it, the lynching of African Americans at the unarmed African Americans. Now, I always think about things like Dylann Roof. You know, the fact that Dylann Roof, who massacred 9 African Americans in a church after he sat with them in Bible study, was picked up by law enforcement, taken to Burger King before he was even taken to jail, and nothing happened to him. Right? There's never. this is the thing that gets me. It's black men. Black and brown men can't seem to be brought in safely, but a killer like Dylann Roof can.
After a trip to Burger King, yeah.
That's right.
No, anecdotally, I live in Santa Cruz, and we have some homeless issues. I was walking early downtown in Santa Cruz, and a couple of policemen were dealing with a very loud and potentially violent homeless guy and I heard him clacking this metal pipe. And as I was walking on, I was thinking, you know, if he was African American, he'd be dead right now. You know, because it was just, you know, it was just the leeway they were giving him. The incidents that have happened with African Americans, they have been given, you know, infinitesimally less than that. So the question I have, though, is so we've got the memorial, which sounds breathtaking and fantastic, going up in Alabama. How do we get it across the country? I know for AIDS that we had the AIDS quilt, and that traveled, and so the you know a lot of people got to experience it. My fear around this is that, or like people out here in the West and everything else, where, you know, slavery wasn't part of the geographic legacy that the message is going to get missed. You know, how do we
I don't know if you saw
universal?
That. I don't know if you saw. Well, there's a map that the lynchings that took place in this country that were documented by EJI didn't all happen in the South or the Deep South. They were really counties all over the United States. And one of the brilliant things about EJI's memorial is that these concrete columns that Brody alluded to, that we saw kind of hanging, they've been made in duplicate. So any county in the country that is memorialized at the in Montgomery will be able to retrieve their duplicate column and bring it to their place. That is really part of EJI's hope. They want people to memorialize it, kind of where it happened. And there are places all over this country. And, of course, you know, folks could do more to kind of, you know, research the history of lynching in all over the United States. That's another kind of fallacy, is that the horrors of race and racism, white supremacy, were confined to the South. It was a Southern problem, when in fact it's a United States problem. So I would tell people that, and even if things happened in one region kind of more than another, it's still a part of our shared history, and it's our responsibility to at the very least, educate children across the country about what happened in this country.
Which brings me to my question. How do we get these initiatives into these schools? And again, you folks at the Southern Poverty Law Center with this initiative launched in February, I think, is brilliant. But how do we get it into these school districts, particularly in areas, okay, where mom-pop apple pie Chevrolet and the Walmart customers are like 85 to 90% white? You know, we need to be able to, you know, I'll be honest with you, the conversations don't need to happen in the black community. The conversations don't need to happen in the Latino or Asian, okay, communities. These conversations need to happen in the white communities, because that's where the root cause of the problem is. They need to be aware. It's total lack of awareness.
We all need to be educated, Brody. I mean, you know, the system affects all of us. And if you look at the public school system, you find that, you know, it's majority kids of color. So they need to be educated about the true history of America as well. So I think that, I mean, we have our project, the Teaching Tolerance Project, where we send out free resources, and all our resources are free. So if there's any kind of educators that are listening now, parents who are interested in the initiative, go to the tolerance.org website, download the information, and take it to your school. You know, as I say, they're all free. They're all evidence-based, research-based. If there's professors out there who are teaching educators, you know, and education programs. That's where it needs to start too. So when we have teachers that are being trained, train them, you know, kind of about train them on what they need to teach and how they need to teach it. Come up with, you know, strategies. The Teaching Tolerance Program, beyond this one project, Teaching Hard History, it's just full of resources in terms of professional development to help teachers broach these conversations, to help teachers who you mentioned. The majority of teachers in the United States public schools really you'd think we were back in the 50s. The majority are still white females teaching an increasingly diverse student of color population. And so we have to find a way, you know, God bless them for being teachers. We've got to find a way for them to better connect and build their cultural competency so that they can better educate their and honor their students' history. And this is across the board,
Are there any legislative actions in any states that are advocating for increased educational awareness? I know in California, we're the only state where we actually had the legislature on the behalf of LGBT history to legislate inclusiveness. And it is still being worked on. It passed several years ago, and they're still just now getting material into the books. What is happening from the slavery and the lynching and that whole environment education?
Well, It really is up to us as kind of citizens, and what you're doing in California is admirable. What we're seeing more, really, kind of the truth is that states are moving away from. We saw this in Arizona. We see this in other states across the country, where they're taking away ethnic studies programs, where they're saying, where they're reducing kind of the multicultural education. So they're taking it away and trying to kind of move more to, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. We are really going backwards in terms of how we're educating and what we're educating our students about. So it really is up to individuals in their individual communities to can be involved in their democracy, know what, go to school board meetings, find out what your kids are being taught. We typically don't hear about kind of parent involvement or community involvement until something bad happens. And something bad happens very often in the teaching of African American history and the teaching of the enslavement of African Americans. There's these things called simulations where teachers will sometimes simulate, you know, kind of slave conditions, which is always a bad idea. Then we find, and parents find out about it, and they're like, oh, my God, what's happening? And then there's some change. But we need to be more proactive and become involved, because that's what the people on the far right are doing. They are trying to ensure that nothing is being taught, you know, for the most part. And, you know, I could go into the kind of the whole movement for choice and school vouchers and all of that. And that is about teaching nothing it's not about teaching the things that we've been talking about tonight, that's for sure.
Well, one of the things, you know, especially today, and this is kind of disturbing, we've been looking at some of the surveying and polling done today on the Holocaust.
Oh, I saw that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I saw that today.
And
it's heartbreaking. Auschwitz is?
No, they don't. It's like, and you've got almost two-thirds of millennials. Okay. Two-thirds of them. So for me, I mean, it's more than just, I think, you know, an initiative, Alicia. I think it's got to be more than that. It's got to be.
No, you're right.
It's got to be people having, I think, a sense of personal responsibility. And I know, you know, I get yelled at all the time because I'm not an American. I'm a Canadian. You know, so it's like I get on a soapbox and I start yelling at people. You know, they get to the rank race once or twice. It's like, you're Canadian. Shut up. Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you a little story. When I was a little boy, our family used to travel from Ontario, Canada to Florida, okay, during the winter for our little holiday break. And when I was young, we would make stops in places like South Carolina and Georgia, and there would be these interesting signs in public places, white only, colored only. And I remember asking my parents about that, and they got all sorts of embarrassment, and their excuse and cop-out was, well, it's an American thing, okay? Here I am going on 50-something years after those trips going, and it's still an American thing, but the Americans haven't done anything about the thing. You know, it's almost like the Holocaust thing. You know, they were not, what is it going to take? You know, I think it's more than, I think it's like what you and I discussed. I think it's just, it's awareness, it's raising awareness, and it's getting people to understand this is a fundamental flaw in American democracy. If you can't accept this, and you can't understand the context of this, then, yeah, there's a bigger issue here.
I agree. Let me add, Brody, that you're right about the millennials, but I would also add it's important to note that adults also had a lot of misinformation. The percentages around the adults saying that, no, 6 million Jews weren't killed. It was much, much less than that. This is the right biting on so many other different things. This is how these false narratives are created and floated, and then people begin to become Holocaust deniers, and then it's accepted as normal. So we need to stop this and stop this now. We know that there's been an increase in anti-Semitism in this country, you know, for the last couple of decades, and there's a global increase in anti-Semitism. We need to really be concerned about this spread of, we're going to talk about fake news or misinformation. We need to stop it, and we need to challenge it at every turn, and then learn from places like Germany that memorialize it and teach their students the history of what happened. There's markers up to people who were killed during the Holocaust, and we need to do a better job of acknowledging the history that we're not so proud of, because it's important to ensure that each subsequent generation knows the truth about what happened, and so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I hate to be the real cynic in the party here, but from my perspective as a parent right now, I would say if we have a population who can deny that our schools that are threats because of gun violence and not doing a darn thing about it for years, what they actually teach in those schools is sort of like the next level up of accomplishment we have to tackle. One of the things that I would, as a tactic, project out, because it's another way to educate the society as a whole, is Hollywood. And because this narrative is also not really coming through in what we're seeing in the movies or on television. I mean, it's all kind of being, everybody's there was a joke on Roseanne about, there's a black family comedy or an Asian American family comedy and us, and oh, we're all the same. And that's what entertainment mm-hmm. is projecting, where, again, this legacy is not being spoken to on that level either.
No, you're right.
I don't know. there probably is a question in there somewhere. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, I appreciate you bringing up the issue of gun violence, because that's one of the areas in which I see hope with what the students are doing, regardless of what the adults are doing to help them. It's that young people, and it's always the case, young people really push and create social change. So, we've just got to remain hopeful.
Yeah, I would say and I think they're the audience that we need to get educated on this. Mm-hmm. The vocal young mm-hmm. people to demand that they get educated on the things that are pertinent to them today. I mean, it's
that's right.
These are intelligent kids.
The kids that we the seniors, the high school seniors that we interviewed or surveyed, are very upset and are demanding. In fact, going back to their schools and advocating on behalf of the students who are now there, saying, you didn't teach us this, and you should, and this needs to be a part
right.
of it. We can't, we're going to college not knowing kind of the things that we should know, and we deserve better. So, yeah.
Yeah, excellent point. So, and that's a great note. We're down to our last 2 minutes here. So first, Lisha, I want to thank you so much for coming back and coming on with us. I have to say, I learned so much from you this hour you put things in perspective wonderfully and, made my commitment even greater to carry this message forward. Any last point before we sign off?
Just thank you and, thank your kids. Talk to your kids about it. I'm sure they listen to your show.
For our listeners out there, the museum is going to open on April the 26th. It's called the Legacy Museum and the Memorial at 115 Coastal Street in Montgomery, Alabama. You can go on the web to museumandmemorial.egi.org for tickets and more information. Lisha, what's the website for you guys? Just the SPLC?
SPLCenter.org, or you can go to tolerance.org as well for the Teaching Heart History. Thank you so much, Brody, for having me back. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you
so
much for being on. I want to thank our listeners for listening. We will be back again next week on Rated LGBT Radio. Also, listen to Out in Santa Cruz Saturday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on KSCO.com. That's more out information and culture of the LGBT nature. I'm Rob Watson, and on behalf of Brody Levesque and our usual journalist panel, we want to thank you for listening tonight, and a big thank you again to our special guest, Lisha Brooks of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.